Few Things Podcast with Fairbairn and Russell. Well, hello and welcome to the Market Musings podcast, where Darren Hazelwood, who is a regular guest on Stockbox, is joining us today. Darren Hazelwood, of course, the CEO of Panther Metals. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Darren, for the podcast, a slightly more relaxed fireside chat we're going to have about many things, I hope. How are you doing?
I'm very well, Mark. It's been an interesting few days in the markets and globally.
An interesting few months, really, with what is kind of going to happen and the way things are going, and things over the weekend also throwing a bit of a spanner potentially into the works. We can get onto all of that at some point during this podcast. But I mean, really, what we want to cover today is a number of things. And I first of all want to really get into why you decided to take the role in the PLC. Why did you want to become the CEO of Panther Metals? Now, I know your past in private business was a builders merchant, wasn't it? You operated, you owned a successful builders merchant. And what happened there? Did you sell it on and then wanted to do something a bit different with your life and enter the public PLC life?
Well, I was quite a big investor in the sector in London before I took on the role at Panther. But the realities are that I come into the industry and into the business because I saw opportunity. And I think that opportunity's just expanded over the last few years. I expected the market to go a long time before now. I don't think we've ever seen, certainly since the equity markets were born, a more perfect set of circumstances for this industry. And you personally look at things and you make decisions around where you can potentially see the best return for the time you spend on what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I looked around and I felt that this industry was absolutely primed for growth and for building a business.
So when you say you saw an opportunity in the industry, presumably you're talking about the commodities industry, the mining sector, is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And is that where you were a private investor in, mostly in that space, would you say, before you went into the public role?
Yeah, it was. I was at one point, I think I was TR1 in probably up to five
companies. Okay.
One go. So okay. Yeah, I've seen opportunity
and why were you in that space? Was it because you saw opportunity, or was it because that it just was an interesting industry for you?
It's all about return. It's about where you can get the best bang for your buck. And even in these markets, which we're seeing investors have a really hard time, and I've got a huge amount of sympathy for them. I've been there myself. But then that can turn, and it can turn really quickly. And I'm a genuine believer that when this industry does turn and everything is being lined up, there are almost dream scenarios at play now. And I can understand why people can't necessarily see that. It's the classic, you know, it's darkest before dawn is my belief. And I think now you just need a little bit of a settled period, and then you're going to really see it kick on. And mm-hmm. It's going to kick on over a long period. And there's good reasons behind that.
So what opportunity did you see, Darren? Because if you were, you know, Panther, how long has Panther been going for? You know, you in this role, a few years now, isn't it?
So we refinanced the palm oil business on the Aquis Exchange in London. And yeah. I took the role on a year after that had been refinanced. I was a non-exec on the board.
This is about 2017?
No, 2018. March 2018.
Okay. And you were investing privately years before then. So what opportunities did... Yeah. You must have seen the opportunity, well, some would say a bit too early then, maybe.
listen, it's the classic example. You're never going to get your timing absolutely spot on in terms of entry and exit. It's almost impossible. But what you've got to do is have a wider focus and understand things that are at play. Like Panther's a prime example. And I took it on in January of 19. We listed on the main board in January of 20. And then, of course, we run straight into COVID. So we had 18 months, well, basically from the February to a year the following September, we couldn't even get into Canada. And so that took a huge chunk out of the sort of starting point of the business. We saw our price rise, but we rose with all the boats that rose during that COVID boom that we witnessed in some of the junior sector. And then we had a what I call our sort of 6 months of grace of an open period, and then Putin goes into Ukraine, and the markets in our sector simply haven't been the same since. However, the fundamentals of the industry have just improved, and they've just strengthened, and they're particularly strengthened for companies that are focused on Western jurisdictions.
Well, let's talk about the fundamentals then, and the opportunity that you see. Because, I mean, from my point of view, I've been investing in mining companies since probably about 2013, but I can't say it's because I see, you know, at the time that I saw compelling opportunities there. It was more that I found the industry just attractive. And then I started to learn about cycles and that kind of thing. And I've been waiting for this turn in the cycle for, well, probably since about 2013, 2014. However, right now, I can really see that starting. I can really see how that might actually get there, you know, based on fundamentals, based on the cyclical nature, based on the shift in the green economy, based on, I think, the capital that's going to flow out of long duration assets and tech and back into the cyclical commodity industries such as the mining. And it'd be driven by the green economy shift. And I keep coming back to what I discussed with a commodities investor almost a year ago now. We talked about this green shift, and he said if we're going to go down the green shift, we have to create the investment of I think it was 30 United States of Americas. Six United States of Americas in the next 30 years. That's what he said, six United States of Americas in the next 30 years. And the most of that will have to happen in the next 10. It's a significant investment, huge investment in this space at a time when things like tech and the shine on that is coming out. And you can start to see where the sector is really going to have a boom. Short term, I think things, you know, we're not quite there yet. We're not quite at the bottom yet. My personal opinion is we're going to see liquidity coming out of the markets before we get to that boom time. But it's going to come, and it should be an absolutely awesome time for everyone in the sector. But with you, with, you know, your ear a bit more to the ground, and you investing in what you see as opportunity from years ago, what metrics were you looking at that told you that it was a really good opportunity and a value proposition to be had in this sector?
Simply undercapitalization. You've not had the discoveries. And you won't get the discoveries without the finance. I think the common theme from PDAC was that was last week. And it's also something that I've heard in London for the last 6-9 months, is there are a lot of people sitting with a lot of cash on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And that cash wants to find a home, but people are still nervous. But ultimately that money will come in. Look, we've got supply deficits across just about every single commodity on the forward forecasts. And actually you can directly link that to the capital inflows that have gone into sort of tech and Bitcoin instead of exploration and the mining sector. Yeah. And now you're seeing those not bust, but you know, the mindset's changed on that. You're seeing Ukraine and the divide. That's highlighted the divide. Okay, then between effectively what we know as the West and the East. and you're not going to have the same level of sharing of commodities from those areas. So if you're into companies and that have got land holdings in what we class as tier one jurisdictions, the likes of Canada, America, Australia, you're sitting in a very, very strong position, and a stronger position than a lot of people. You've got, as we've already touched on, you've seen that the tech bubble has burst. It burst on the market over the last 12 months. We've seen the likes of Tesla come off and Amazon come off their highs. Certainly Meta.
We've seen lots of redundancies in those sectors as well, every day nearly.
Well, I think I was reading an article yesterday. I think the net redundancies at the moment are 128,000 on the west coast of America. And Meta have just announced yesterday again that they're not filling, I think it's 5,000 roles, and they're making 10,000 people redundant. Mm. You know, it's the sector's matured. And but you've now got, if at the weekend you've got the Fed announced that they're gonna underwrite basically everything in America, in the American banking system. If you've ever seen anything so bullish for precious metals in your entire life, then that is it. That people are gonna wait for things to settle down. But once this settles down, you're actually gonna be left with only one sector in town. Because you've got supply constraints already. You've got jurisdictional risk has been upped due to what's happened in Ukraine. You've got risk capital that's gonna now look outside of tech and Bitcoin. And this is the place that it's gonna come to. Because for the technology to advance now, for us to be able to deliver on climate, on our climate commitments, we're gonna have to invest astronomical sums. But all of these technologies only work if you've got the metals to make them work. And the fact is that across the globe, we don't have the metals. And where those metals are sitting in different countries, we've now got additional problems in terms of accessing those metals if you make those discoveries. And yeah, people are going to become more and more aware of this as we go forward. But I think you're right. I think we're not quite there yet. But when it does turn, it's going to turn on a sixpence. And I think because the fundamentals now are so, so strong, I thought they were there in 2018, 2019, and they've only got stronger and stronger. You're going to see this play out in quite an extraordinary way. And all you have to do within a business is actually understand where you are in the cycle. Mm-hmm. And people talk about this as a cycle. I don't think we're entering a cycle. I think we're entering a completely unseen phase in the history of what we're doing, because we're trying to save the planet from ourselves. And at the same time, we're restricting the access we can have to these commodities and to these discoveries through geopolitical situations. Yeah. It's never been set up better, ever.
I agree. I don't think it's ever been set up better. I think a lot of the sexiness around crypto and all the YouTube channels that popped up, all the armchair experts with crypto, I feel we might start to see that in mining and commodities. We'll have the sexiness around, you know, we'll have copper experts popping up on YouTube. Maybe I should take a load of URLs or YouTube channel names just so I've got them reserved for when this happens, because I can actually see that being the case. I mean, it's never been set up as well. I mean, do you think there's still some heat to come out the markets? I mean, we'll talk there a little bit about the Fed. We're talking about inflation. Perhaps, you know, it's sort of stayed where it was. So it might be, you know, I think they've got it down a bit, but they're going to have to they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, aren't they? Because they want to get inflation down. They want to put the interest rates up, but it's getting tight, you know, and your man on the street is starting to feel it now, just talking to friends. So it's a little bit tricky, isn't it? It's like you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. But what do you think? I mean, do you think we're heading for, you know, a big liquidity event? Do you see, a Black Friday type thing, and you know, just a waterfall chart, or do you see a recession, or even a depression? I hope not. Before we then start to see the bottom, and then you know that the money will hopefully then start to flow into these commodities, because normally that's what happens, isn't it? After this kind of a crisis, governments invest in infrastructure or go to war. Unfortunately, but both
use metals.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
I think there are signs that we could enter into a softish landing.
Okay.
I think inflation is certainly the numbers yesterday indicated that it's starting. It's not under control, but there's certainly signs that it's becoming manageable. And ultimately, the Fed control everything as we stand. Will the Fed now allow a market crash? I don't think it will. Okay. I think the unwritten part of the conversation here is that the Fed are going to have to print again. They're going to do a complete 180-degree U-turn. There's no doubts about that. It's just maths. The maths tell you that it can, America cannot survive without the Fed printing.
So despite what Jerome Powell said in front of Congress last week, that they're going to continue with balance sheet reduction, you think he's going to turn on that?
He's got to.
Okay.
He's got no choice. Look, I think the days are gone where we believe in its entirety, everything that we're being fed from governments and from the Fed. They've got agendas at play, and I respect those agendas, but I don't believe them for certain, and that they will print. Now that's going to be incredibly bullish for precious metals. And
so when you say they're going to print, then are you saying that's bullish for precious metals for sure? But do you think then that will just, you're not saying that we'll see a general sort of crash, S&P and NASDAQ, FTSE, because if there's more printing, it's almost like free money over again. Let's blow the bubble up a bit more.
Well, look, Mark, the bubble is so huge now that they can't pop it anyways. that's the reality. You know, we've seen the risk in terms of the banking sector. You know, we're told the banking sector is incredibly secure and it's very well capitalized and everything else. Well, you know, two banks fell over the weekend.
Yep, big banks. Well,
so let's go on actions rather than words. And what happened? And they fell over incredibly quickly as well, which I think that highlights just how fragile things truly are, despite what you're being told.
Yeah.
Okay. But I also think that because of how fragile and because of how big that bubble is, if they pop the bubble, then you are looking at probably a depression. And nobody wants it, and nobody can see that coming. And I think the Fed are a lot more in control than people would like to realize. And they'll pick up the loose stuff, and you're going to see them try and kick the can further down the road. Whether you agree with that or not, don't care. It's incredibly bullish for everything.
So when you say soft landing, then we're not going to see a crash, but you generally see a bear market, but almost a controlled bear market.
I think you're going to see a time of flatlining, but within that flatlining, there's going to be sectors that are going to absolutely shine and outperform everything. And the only game in town to be able to do that now, unless you see a major advancement in some technology, which I can't see, like the internet of late 1990s, then the technology's gone. But technology bubble's gone. As we discussed, Bitcoin, that's got its issues. But the world, to save itself, needs commodities, and it needs them sooner rather than later. And as a result, that the money inflow and that risk capital has got to come into exploration.
So you're seeing almost a flat line. So no real compelling investment opportunities across the board, except for in commodities and precious metals, given the macro environment for the demand for those metals. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
So that,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it's incredibly bullish for those reasons.
Okay. Okay. Of course, the question is when. We have no idea when that will be. I thought we would start to see some bad stuff happen throughout the winter, but we'd managed to get through the winter. No one seems to have suffered too badly, given the energy crisis and all those things that happened. So we've got through the winter. It's nice and sunny outside today. So you know, it hasn't happened. I was expecting that to happen, last quarter. I'm not particularly investing in it. It basically did, yeah. But I still think there's a bit of heat to come out. Personally, my opinion is there's still a bit of heat to come out generally across the board, which will obviously bring down everything. But then you're going to see some compelling opportunities, because you're going to be able to pick up some compelling, particularly mining stocks, at good, really good valuations. For hopefully a boom time. So, I mean, I think we've sort of covered there generally. Yeah. What you have some other thing to say?
That's the thing that you just touched on there about picking up stocks at incredible
valuation. Because I'm actually not investing in stocks at the moment at all. What do you say? You've got a great Panther Metals. Yeah, well, we'll talk about Panther Metals and what you want to achieve at Panther. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for sure, it's a lot cheaper than it was a year or so ago. Companies like Panther, companies that are, I think, well-capitalized, companies that have good management and have good projects in good jurisdictions. Those are the ones to go after. And I think gold will probably move first before the other commodities. So again, like gold companies, either explorers or near or producing companies. And I have a few on my watch list that I will go at when appropriate. But Panther, Darren, I mean, what's going on with Panther then? I mean, what is your philosophy really with Panther? What's your overarching mission statement? What do you want to achieve?
Ultimately, it's a sellout. It's to sell the business. That's generally where investors see the greatest return. That's what we're looking for. We're here to create the best return we can for investors. The market at the moment, it's not rewarding good news. No. That makes it incredibly challenging to build exploration businesses. But the only way that you lose is to lose money. There's two ways you can lose money in an explorer. That is by selling your shares and mm-hmm. forgetting about the fundamentals and why you bought into it. And the other way is that the company dilutes you to death.
Okay.
So people won't be aware of some of the actions that we've taken and the foresight that we've had. This, for instance, Stockbox is the only media platform we're currently engaged with. Now, don't get me wrong, I love other platforms, and I don't mind mentioning, you know, Vox Markets, Proactive, Share Talk. I like the Market Bull. They're one that First Class Metals, who are near us, use. London Southeast, Cracked Investors. They're all there. I've had all the conversations with them, as well as yourselves. But at this moment in time, should I be assigning capital to those into a market that isn't rewarding good news? And I don't think that we should be. Because what that actually boils down to is dilution. And mm-hmm. we've got to make sure that we're maintaining the message. We've done a bit of internal housekeeping and making sure that we're able to report the news that we're delivering in a more coherent and better structured, more investor-friendly way. So that drill hole planning, investors will see that now and the drill hole results, and that'll all come out in the same context. But what I've focused on mainly is making sure that we've still got a business to go to war with once mm-hmm. the markets accelerate. And they will accelerate. Do we want a business with 400, 500, 600 million shares in issue because we've engaged with all these platforms at a time when the market just simply isn't really interested? Then no, I haven't. And I don't actually make any apologies for that. But you also have to strike a balance. We raised last August. We needed to find out if Ubonga contained the mineralization that we thought it did. And because that helps us drive our plans going forward. And we've now got an 18-month plan we're working on. And there's a huge amount of work that's going to be done within that 18-month plan. But Ubonga proved that it does contain what we hoped it did. And whilst the market hasn't recognized that, certainly the industry has. You know, in 2021, we at Wishbone, we drilled two holes and we hit, I think it's 80 over 82 meters of massive sulfide, semi-massive sulfide. This is a huge system at Wishbone.
Yeah.
And then we've drilled in the autumn and we've done the one thing that nobody could ever discover. And that was actually mineralization at a commercial level. So we now know that the fluids running through the system at Wishbone contain mineralization. So that means, that tells us the deposit's there. And now we've just got to go find a deposit. And in fact, others within the industry absolutely 100% agree with us. Talking to some guys from BHP, they're saying, look, it's there. Now you just got to go and drill it out.
Okay. Because well, they should know because they were there a while ago.
They were, but in a different area.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it was only a few kilometres away, but their reports, you read their reports, and they're ultra bullish. And it was only the Windy Crag scandal that pulled them away.
Yeah.
And just the fact that we've hit VMS with one hole at survey, all those pieces that we've always maintained are there at Ubonga. They're there. Mm. However, you've also got to balance it out with the cost of capital.
Yeah.
And at the moment, the cost of capital is just too high. Why am I going to? Because what people have got to appreciate is we raise X. We issued, let's say we issue 20 million shares. We've actually got to issue 20 million warrants as well.
To get people interested.
Yeah. So you're looking at a huge amount of dilution at the very moment that we actually have got, we are uber confident of our exploration portfolio. Dotted Lake, I can go into all kinds of detail on Dotted Lake, why we believe there's a discovery there. Manitou Lakes, that just keeps growing every time we set foot on the ground, across the shear zone. There's gold that's open along strike, it's open at width, in the soils right over shear zone that's running 700 meters from an historic mine, and that the old guys didn't mess about. They had to get in there literally on their hands and knees and dig the stuff out. They didn't build these adits just for the sake of doing them to give themselves something to do over a cold winter. But our portfolio is such that actually what I've got to do is make sure that we're protecting it at the very moment the capital markets are at their most brutal. And I've got a position in place. We can actually survive through till December, January of next year with our current cash resources. If we wanted to, do I want to? No. We've got a plan, and we need to be getting on with this. But at the same time, I would not be raising down at these levels in the slightest. In fact, to the extent that I have a belief in how we're going to take this to the next stages, I've got a 5 or 6 point plan, and that might surprise a lot of people. And one of those is undoubtedly looking to Canada to flow through. Flow through is always done at quite a big premium, and we qualify for flow through funding. Mm-hmm. And it would be remiss of me not to look at that as an option. If we decide to do what we might want to do this year, we may not. But it's all part of the planning and actually in the execution, because it's been executed day in, day out. It's probably never been busier behind the scenes at Panther. But all okay. this is about timing as well, because I want to time this so that we're going into a bull market. So it's an incredibly exciting time, but it's not a time to have. I don't want to come out of this with half a billion shares in issue.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're talking very confidently about the projects there, and you know, saying what BHP is saying that there's a discovery there. Just go ahead and find it, sort of thing. But you also mentioned there about protecting what you've got. I mean, are you in a sort of capital preservation mode or sort of a wait and see mode? No, you're not. What are you going to? Complete opposite. Okay.
Complete opposite. Yeah. Well, I think we might surprise the market over the next few months in just what we come out with and just what we deliver. What I've got to do now is move the business away from being absolutely 100% reliant on the market, so the market can push us and pull us as okay. the market sees fit instead of what we've actually intrinsically built into the business.
Okay. And how can you say how you plan to
no.
do that?
No.
Okay.
Trust the process. I offered to resign from the business on the basis that I'm not diluting at these levels.
Okay.
And that wasn't accepted because the board can see the plan and they can see the process that we're going through. And they also understand exactly why now isn't the time to do it, and that the rewards will come further down the line. You know, this reminds me of a story of from Sony, the guy that basically built Sony, Akio. You know, he built the business from the ruins of Tokyo, and in the late 50s, you saw the transistor replace the vacuum tube. And anyway, they built the first ever pocket radio. It actually wasn't quite a pocket radio, to be fair. They designed some shirts with a slightly bigger pocket so that it would go in there. And so he was trundling around New York and Wall Street trying to find customers, because he knew that this was a big thing. And somebody come to him and said, look, we want 100,000 units off you. And this then, you're talking about $40 a time, which in the late 50s was a huge amount of money. And Akio, he was delighted. But then the company who the name escapes me. I think it's Bulova. Bulova, they wanted their name on there as opposed to Sony's. And he said no. He refused. He knew that this was an industry changer, that they're on the cusp of some really brilliant things. But it was important that the Sony brand led that, because that's what's going to drive the next stages of business all the way through. And he turned them down, and his board, whilst wanting to see that kind of revenue in, supported him ultimately. And he was proved 100% right. And he actually said that was the defining moment of his business career, having the guts to turn that down at that time, because it gave him the capacity to grow the business beyond all levels anybody thought was even possible. And whilst I mention that, because that's actually where I see Panther at the moment, in terms of you're getting pressure, people want to know exactly what the plans are, exactly what you're doing. We know exactly what they are. We know exactly the path we're going. We know exactly what we're doing. We know exactly how we're going to get there. We love the assets that we've got. We don't need to do any more deals. We don't need to issue shares for that. We don't. There's nothing more in this business other than getting the drill bits in the ground and the drill bits turning. There'd be some work needs doing on sites for that. But I think this moment will define me in terms of the business. We're a business that's sold for £200 million with 200 million shares in issue. That's a pound a share. Okay. But if we've got 600 million shares in issue, that's 33 pence a share. There's a huge, huge difference there. And don't try and feed a market that is not interested, because all you're doing is burning cash. And I think this market should change very rapidly. So, and we're now set up. But there were things we had to do internally, but to just tighten things up a little bit in terms of how we report. And you'll see this all come out over the months ahead. And I fully accept some of those criticisms. But yeah, we're in the business of making discoveries. And I don't care what anyone says. The only way to make discoveries is to drill. Now, when you drill, you're going to have less success than the fiddling about on surface. But that doesn't change the business, messing about on surface. It's only the drill bit changes these businesses. It's only the drill bit that will turn it into a £200-300 million company.
Yeah.
And regardless what anybody releases, what anybody says, it's when the drill bit's turning that you can transform these things. And that's exactly my philosophy, and I'll stay with that.
Okay, when the drill bit's turning to transform. Okay, you talked about not feeding the market. What do you mean by that? You mean not releasing news into the market unless it's really necessary?
No. What I mean by that is not having a vast array of PR platforms all on the go at one go to get that message out there.
Okay.
Because if
okay.
the message isn't, if the market doesn't want to receive any messaging, which it doesn't at the moment, it's an extremely difficult place to get rewarded. Then I don't believe in having multiple platforms open.
Okay.
Because what everyone has to remember is all of these platforms come at a cost. And that's not me moaning. They do some exceptional work and some really, really good work. But I don't want to be having a cost base that means that I'm diluting in a market like this, because it can have exponential impact going forward.
So the cost is really, you want it to go into the ground. You want it to go into the drill.
Yep, absolutely. Because I'm not scared of failure. Because if you're prepared to drill, then you've got to be prepared to fail. And the most remarkable thing about Panther is we've drilled a few holes at Wishbone and proved up a big system. We've proved up mineralization. We've drilled one hole at Survey, discovered a VMS. We've drilled three holes at Orchid. We've discovered graphite. We've drilled one hole at Dotted Lake outside of our current target area, but we hit gold all the way along that hole. Unfortunately, the grade wasn't high enough to be of a sort of a commercial interest, but the drill, it was absolutely perfect for drilling. And we proved that because we hit gold all the way through. So our drilling success is remarkable. What isn't remarkable is our timing in market terms. But that's
you think you think given a different market, those results would have really made a difference to the company share price?
Oh, look, the industry is extremely intrigued by what's going on at Ubonga.
Okay.
Really intrigued. London doesn't care. London just looks at it and goes, "Oh, you found a bit of zinc." Well, actually, we found a bit of zinc in a greenstone belt that people have had eyes on for a lot of years, including BHP. We've had Dome there, had the Chinese there, but nobody found the smoking gun. Nobody found the mineralization, even though everything else lines up perfectly. We found that smoking gun, and I think in a different market, the market would be rewarding that success and then paying for us to be back there ASAP, which is, of course, what we want to do and what I want to do. So,
and is it about then, you found a smoking gun, is it now about finding out how big it is, finding out what's there? Okay.
The mineralization's there, the system's there, nice VMS, huge, huge VMS.
Okay.
It's just now about step out drilling. That's as simple as it is at Wishbone.
Okay.
But survey is a nearly 3 kilometer long target.
Yeah.
It's half a kilometer wide. This is massive. And we put one drill hole in there and we discovered it's a VMS. We've got anomalous zinc over 14 meters for one drill hole. You know, this is an incredibly exciting phase the business is entering into.
Well, I mean, I can tell by looking at you that you are clearly excited. I'm looking forward to when you can release your sort of, I think you mentioned a 5-point plan or something, but, you know, when you can get more information out on the plans and plans, that would be great. But, I mean, what I've picked up really is the ultimate goal is a sale of either the company or one of the assets. You want to get the drill bits turning. You're not afraid of failure. You want to put the money into the ground and preserve capital to make sure it's going where it can build value. No plans for expansion, and importantly, no dilution, no discount or, you know, low-priced fundraisers. Is that generally summing up what you want to achieve, and we can await to see these plans released to market?
I think it's absolutely spot on, apart from the very last sentence. It's not what we plan to achieve, it's what we are achieving.
Okay. Well, thank you for that, Darren. It's been a nice chat. Anything else you wanted to cover? I mean, we've covered a few topics there, really, haven't we, today?
No, it's interesting. Look, I think we've got to hope that these markets settle down sooner rather than later, that the banking situation doesn't grow. Credit Suisse have potentially got issues.
Yeah,
but what I'd like to say, I don't think it's a coincidence that the announcement they made yesterday, in terms of their accounting for 21-22, my own personal view is that they're probably trying to get this all done in one go. So yeah. I think we may see a little bit of short term pain, but then look what the game in town is.
Look what the game in town is, indeed. And I'll echo what you say about PDAC. I've interviewed people from PDAC. They're saying there is money there. There is money there, and a lot of it. It's just not going in at the moment. But PDAC was very busy. People were nonstop talking to people. The buzz about the space, uranium in particular as well. I know Panther's not into that, but there's a lot of money there to be had.
Don't forget, we hold 20% of Fulcrum, who have got uranium assets. Mm. So we're not entirely devoid of
uranium exposure.
Of uranium.
I think
people need to do their DD with us.
Do their DD. Yeah, and generally I think on the sector as well, because it's going to be an awesome time, but it's usually the case, isn't it, that the majority of people jump in when most of the gains have been had. You look at crypto, and unfortunately a lot of the people that joined later will never get their money back. And they're still holding on with the hope that that's going to happen, but it's never going to happen. So, now's the time to be checking out this sector. Well, thank you very much, Darren. What a fascinating chat we've had today. We have not done one of these before in this style. So thank you very much for your time.
I've enjoyed it. I can only apologise for not being able to roll out more direct plans, but I simply can't, and people will see that and understand that over the next couple of 3 months, I think.
Okay.
And then excellent. Why.
Well, thank you very much, Darren.
Cheers, Mark.